Hello and welcome to the CEO Blind Spot Show, where leaders lead leaders. I'm your host, Birgit Kantz, and today's guest is Russ Hawkins, who is the CEO of Agilence, which is a leading technology company that has actually helped hundreds of retail stores, restaurants, and grocers achieve an overall return on investment of anywhere between 103 and 8,000%. Welcome to the show, Russ.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Every time I hear those statistics, I think we're not charging enough. We need to charge more.
Yes. And I know those statistics are true because you're a data man and I saw the report. So I'm, of course, curious, what are some of the reasons that you think you've succeeded so well as a leader? I saw that you've also led and sold to other companies. What's at least one reason that you feel like you have figured out how to succeed?
Well, in my view, there's only one real reason, and that's the people that I recruit and get on the team and the things I do to keep them aligned with the objectives of the company. And, my view is, from a manager's standpoint, it's a virtuous cycle. I mean, if we as managers take care of our people, give them clear objectives in terms of what the company wants to do, have a set of values that you, by thought, word, and action, live to, then they're going to take care of the customers. And if the people take care of the customers are going to take care of the shareholders, and the shareholders are going to take care of the manager. So it's a pretty simple cycle from my perspective. It all comes to people, and there's a lot of things you can do to ensure that that works. Certainly in the old days, in the bricks and mortar office days, that was true. And we're a virtual company now, and it's become a little bit more difficult, a few more different challenges, but basically the fundamental driver from my perspective is the same. Make sure the people know what they're supposed to do. Make it very, very clear. Give them that over and over and over again. Have an open door. Let them come in and ask questions and do what they need to do. And make sure you have a set of values that you demonstrate in the way you operate every day.
Yeah, in fact, I saw you list your values on your website, and
We
I
do.
found one in particular very interesting that you made it a point to say we over communicate and don't withhold. And
Right.
I can imagine how important that is, especially like you said, right now when we have shifted to a lot of companies doing remote work. So, what adjustments have you made now that you are remote?
Well, I mean, we're in a part of a great experiment here, right? There's no question that we're in on ground that is relatively new for me. I'm kind of an old gray hair here, but also, new for pretty much everybody in the team. We were extremely fortunate to have a great chief technology officer back in 2019 who was preparing us for snow days. And then in January of 2020, we did our last one, kind of jokingly say, okay, this is going to be the COVID test. Everybody's going to stay home for a day and we're going to pretend we have COVID. And then little did I know that 2 months later, we would be shutting the company's offices for that period of time. So, I can't wander around. I used to like to wander around a lot, sit in on meetings, talk to people. Can't really do that now, at least not in the traditional way. We've done a number of things. We use Zoom, of course, and we use Microsoft Teams, and it's a little bit of anarchy on the tools that we're using, which drives me a little bit crazy. But so just in terms of Zoom, we're used it a couple of different ways. One of them is that our operations team actually keeps a Zoom open all day with everybody in there, and then they go off and do their work. But if they're needed, they just get yelled at, hey, I need your attention over here, and they can jump together. So that's one thing that's been working on our IT operations side of things. But in terms of what I do, there's a few things. First of all, I have five reporting people, directly reporting people. And we've got about 70 people today. And so in addition to making sure that everybody's got the clear objectives, I have a weekly staff meeting where we go over the things that we're dealing with that week collectively as a group. Secondly, I have one-on-ones with every one of my direct reports every week. And I'm obsessive note keeper. So I've got notes on the things that we've talked about and notes on the things that are on my mind as we go through the week. And when we have those one-on-ones, we do that. So that's primarily how I interact or make sure that my direct reports and I are on the same page. And that kind of trickles down, I think. I think they each do that with their direct reports and expect theirs to do more. We run monthly meetings now where we get the entire team together, again, usually over Zoom. Usually it's around some kind of activity. We've done trivia games, we've done Name That Tune, we've done a bunch of things like that. These are voluntary, by the way. They're not required that people attend, but the intent is to try to make up for some of the esprit de corps that we may have lost by not being in front of each other every day.
Yeah.
And then we also do, so far, we've done three of them. Every 6 months, I bring the entire team in. Now, the dynamics of the team have changed a little bit. We no longer have only the pool near our physical office to draw from, and we're increasingly having distributed teams, primarily the country, but even outside the country. We have a group of developers that are down in Costa Rica. We have a group in Phoenix. Most of my salespeople have been remote. There is a kind of a nexus where we were in the Philadelphia area, so there's still a pretty large concentration there. But we bring people in, and the, you know, there's several objectives of that meeting. Mainly it's to get them talking to each other, to get people meeting people face to face that they haven't met. We do some training usually. Last time we had a speaker on how to improve your memory and to remember things like in business situations and social situations. Very well received, a whole bunch of fun for people. We do some other kind of departmental training, but the rest of it is sharing. It's individual teams talking about what they're up to. And it always starts again with me going over those very clear objectives. So every meeting starts with, here are the objectives of the company. Here's how we're achieving against those objectives. And then it's in that context that everybody else talks about. And then usually we have some really fun thing to do. We've done a cruise on a boat. Last time we did it in Asbury Park, New Jersey. We rented a venue and had a Bruce Springsteen cover band come in and had food and everything for everyone. So you know, those are the kind of the scheduled things we do, but really try to encourage feedback from people on a regular basis. I have an open door. I encourage people to talk to us. We have a team of people that actually works on our values and looks at how we're achieving against those values, a self-assessment, if you will. Company level self-assessment on the values. We encourage everybody to participate in that. And so far, I would say it's working. I mean, it's still an experiment, but you know, we're well on our way.
Yeah. Well, and throughout this conversation, I can hear you're also living up to your value of fun. And, you know, your company's name is so appropriate, right? It's a combination of agile and intelligence. And you have obviously figured out how to be agile yourself and deal with the remote world. And you're testing what's working and not working. Then I do have another question, though, on the agile part. And I know that you use machine learning to help loss prevention. And it seems right now that, you know, there's a divide, either people who are learning artificial intelligence and generative intelligence and those that are not. How are you dealing with that in your company?
Well, the world is changing dramatically. I mean, AI has been around for a long time, but the tools that exist today, these large language models that are out there and the, you know, the proliferation of models that you can apply to your specific business problems have expanded multiplicatively. And we're on our way, I guess I would say. And I think it's a journey for everybody. You know, AIs are going to have an impact on lots of aspects of our business. Today, we use it in two areas of the business. We have a case management product, and one of them is around looking at, through an automated machine learning-based algorithm, similarities between cases across very, very large organizations. So one of our customers is a 15,000 location pharmacy, for example. And so the way it works is to take every case that's entered into the case management system and assign certain attributes to it. And then as that database gets larger, we're able to start to predict whether a particular case is likely to be one that's a problem from a loss prevention standpoint. And so it starts to get a predictive around these things. And it's
and are you teaching your own people how to start to learn various AI things, or is it just some people?
Well, I'm trying to encourage everybody to learn. In fact, right now, one of the I'm not sure they think it's fun. I think it's fun. One of the things I'm asking them to do is to compete in a contest about just greenlighting ways that we can use these technologies. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you can't greenlight without learning something about it. So I'm encouraging people to do that. And we're just in the beginning phases of that this quarter. And my hope is that's going to encourage people to learn more about it. We do have a team of engineers that have skills in those areas, and so they are resources that others can learn from. But it's a process, and it's, you know, it's a journey that we're on. And the main thing, and this is advice that I would give all of your listeners, is you can't ignore this stuff. This is a seminal change in the way that we gather and deliver information, the way we understand information. There's obviously a lot of people who are worried about AI and what its impact is, and I get that. I think it's important to be cognizant of that, but It also is a great tool that you can use. These large language models, for example, are, they're fantastic first drafts. If you've got to write things down and you need an assistant to go and research stuff, you can use these things very effectively. Yeah. But specifically for us, we're looking for ways to improve the functionality of our product by leveraging some of these technologies. And I would put us, relatively early on that road. And part of it is the point that you bring up, which is, everybody doesn't know things at the same level, and everybody doesn't learn things at the same level. So you've got to give people room to do that stuff.
Yeah. And there you go, living up to your company name again.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Well, then there's one other thing you said early on. You maybe have a tip or two you can also share regarding how do you hire well? Do you use assessments? Have you learned how to interview?
I think we have gradually learned how to interview. We did use assessments for a while. Frankly, we found them to be a little bit too rigid. And, I'm somebody that in my career, I've been underestimated a lot. I spent my first formative business years, at least the really important ones, in a big old company. Eventually became Lucent Technologies, but it was in the telecom side of the business. And when I first went out into the startup world, people were telling me that I would never make it, that I had, too much of this historical kind of brainwashing that went on. I just didn't listen to them. And I learned how to adapt to the things that I want to do. And I learned how to figure it out. And I encourage people in the company to do that as well.
Yeah. Drive is an important part of it, right?
It absolutely is.
Okay. Well, look, Russ, you sound just like a natural born leader, even though I know you worked very hard at various things. But did you ever struggle with anything, or did you ever have a blind spot?
Definitely have had blind spots. No question about it. And one of the things that's related to what we've been talking to is, and I think it's a big opportunity for a blind spot, is when you are remote. When people ask me where the company is located now, I say we're headquartered in the cloud. And that always gets a little bit of a laugh. But it is true. We're 100% virtual now. We even gave up our office building beginning of last year. And so, you don't really realize what you're missing in the isolation. And so that's a big source of potential blind spots. I think.
How did you discover that?
How did I discover the blind spot? Well, yeah. Because I realized when we get face to face with people, or when I move down further down into the organization beyond my direct reports, that there's valuable information there that I have not assimilated. I haven't heard and I haven't assimilated. And it's because of the fact that I can't just wander around and drop in on people. And so it's informed some of how we do meetings, and it's informed some of how we try to empower people. We developed, for example, group called the extended leadership team. So I have a senior leadership team, which is the C-level people in the company. And now I have an extended leadership team, which is mostly people that have reporting people. In some cases, they've got unique capabilities. They may not have reporting people, but they've got unique insights. And so now I regularly meet with that group and encourage them to give me feedback, and learning that they're things that I used to be able to see that I can't see anymore. And so that I think it's a very correct example of blind spot. A couple of other areas, real quickly here, and they fall in three areas. First one is people. One of my mantras here is that everybody has to have backup plans, because you never know what's going to happen with people. I like to say you never know who's going to win the lottery and decide that they're going to quit, right?
Yes.
And so you want to talk about being blindsided. If you've got a key employee or a unique set of capabilities that's embodied in one individual, you can quickly be blindsided if that person leaves the company for whatever reason, whether they're, recruited out to go to another company, which has happened to me, or, they've got a life-changing event that changes what they need to do. And so as managers, and one of the things I encourage all of my people to do is to always have contingency plans, to always have options. Everybody should always be thinking about the options they have to complete the work that they need to do and deliver on the objectives that the company has. So
you discovered that because someone blindsided you and quit, or how did you know?
Yes, okay. In a big way. Someone who was my right-hand man, who frankly thought I had an agreement with that they would stand by me through a certain time frame, and they ended up basically getting a deal that they couldn't refuse. And I kind of appreciate, what was the case for them, but it left me high and dry. And that really drove it home for me. And since then, it's something that I pay a lot of attention to.
Well, you kind of answered my next question, which is, what tips do you have on how to make it through crisis? And it sounds like this was a mini crisis, if not
This
major.
absolutely was a mini crisis. So in this particular case, this was an individual that had a lot of customer interaction. And so one of the first things I wanted to make sure is that my customers understood what was happening and reiterate to them their importance to us as customers. Really wanted to make sure that the customers knew what was going on and reiterate my commitment to delivering on the same kind of results that they've had in the past, and to make sure they knew that they could call me at any time if we ever fell short of that. Similarly, with the team that was around, I mean, this was actually a shock, not just for me, but for the organization as a whole. And so there was a lot of additional communication that needed to happen, and it needed to happen very quickly, and it needed to happen very succinctly, and it had to happen on a human level. And by that, I mean, no corporate speak. This is, you got to just talk to people like you're human and they're human, and to make sure that, you know, you're clear about what the impact of this particular loss was going to be. And that took a long time. It took months. I had to hire new people as well. And I'm still working. This is something that happened about a year ago, and I'm still working on getting the team back to where it needs to be or needed to be when the event happened.
Yeah.
You know, the pandemic was another area that's been a crisis for us. Found the same exact thing. As a matter of fact, I found that I blossomed a little bit during the pandemic, because it was such a gut-wrenching situation, so much fear out there, so much doubt about what the impact was going to be on our business. You know, we ended up still growing in 2020 by about 8%. And that was a result of the same kind of communication. I was writing on a weekly basis to my entire company team, my internal team, just, you know, trying to assuage their fears, trying to talk to them about, are they safe and are their families safe? And if they weren't safe, what could the company do to help them? You know, being very empathetic. And I've gotten some feedback that I rose to the challenge, which was kind of heartening for me, but not to toot my own horn here too much.
No, but feedback is key. So I see the value of communicating, or as you said in your values, over communicate and don't withhold. And it sounds like, regardless of the size of your company, you've got brand name customers that are big companies, you know, Calvin Klein and Guitar Center, Panera. You've got lots of big companies. And
CVS is probably our biggest.
Oh, well, there you go. And I'm sure you over-communicated with them too when you were going through crisis. But
we absolutely did.
Well, you've got an amazing company. I know if people want to know more, they can go to agilenceinc.com. But I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to come on this podcast and contribute to other leaders, because you've got a wealth of experience. And you know, I even saw that you had a degree in English and chemistry, and I'm like, okay, how did you end up now being a CEO? But you know, you have your MBA too. But anyway, thank you so much for
sharing. Well, I've always wanted to run a company. You know, so I grew up with no money. I'm the son, grandson, and great grandson of Boston firemen. And went to college. I was fortunate to go to a great secondary school and a great college. Started out as a chemistry major because I wanted to be a scientist originally. And then I changed over to being an English major late in my college career. But I've always been entrepreneurial, and I would use the word intrapreneurial as well. Even when I was with the big companies like Lucent, I always tried to find new ways to do things. I always tried to do what I call the reverse think. How could this be done differently? How could it be done better?
Okay. Well, thanks again for being on the show and sharing your leadership tips.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Have a great day.